extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. We are bad with calendars, we're bad with email, we're bad with dates, everyone. Charlie Davies, we promised you, Charlie. And guess what? Charlie was not scheduled for this show, and I blame producing Anders.
It was an April Fool's joke. It was an April Fool's
for all of us, except we actually believed it. It wasn't
the
like
most
we were...
respect I have right now is that we said it multiple times on the show, and Charlie never came and said I'm not on, which means Charlie's not even listening, which I respect so much.
Actually,
out of sight, out of mind, baby.
Actually, false. Charlie called me yesterday, FaceTimed me yesterday, and said, I thought I was on the 15th. I'm jacked to be on Thursday. Oh, do you know something I don't know? And I was like, boy, this is really awkward. I'm assuming that you probably know your schedule better than I do. So Charlie will be here. We're trying to get him for the prediction show, which will be April 12th. And then we'll have a big fun party with as many soccer voices as we can get on here on the 15th ahead of opening day on April 16th. That's what we're building toward. The 16th, 17th, 18th opening weekend. But oh, by the way, CCL is coming. We will have our Philadelphia Union preview today. It is their first time into the breach. We'll see how they deal with it. Also talking NYCFC, San Jose, and Austin as our season previews roll on. We got a bunch of big stuff at MLSsoccer.com, the new MLSsoccer.com. The call-up had Merritt Paulson. Yeah, he has things to say that you might want to listen to, even if, you know, you're not a fan of the Timbers. Go check it out. Doyle had your most important players for every team this season. Who's the most important player host on Extra Time this year, in your opinion, Doyle?
The most important what?
Which host? I mean,
who's our most important player?
Yeah, who's our most important player?
It's Gaspar.
Ooh, whoa.
Gaspar is Makalele. He just makes it easier for everyone. Easily, David Goss. You could put anybody on a show with David Goss, and they're never going to run out of things to talk about.
You could,
and if they don't have anything to say,
a better player to compare me to. I'm about to
Are you gonna cry?
I'm so excited right now. Claude Makélélé is a god. When you're a player who a style of position is named after, then you are greatness. Oh my god. Whoa. Okay, I'm reeling now.
Yeah,
I might actually not be able to talk for the rest of the show.
It's getting a little dark at the edges of your vision, like you're about to black out. I love that.
A little bit shaky. He's losing the ability to speak. That's not normal. I'm working on my CCL most likely to make history rankings right now because nobody's won this thing. So who has the best chance of winning in 2021? And, of course, Greg Seltzer took on Sergio Aguero. He is going to be out of contract with Man City. Where would he fit in MLS? Seltzer will tell you. Before we get to the previews and, the current events and the news that we should also talk about and produce an honors reminder of the day. There is a new website. It is awesome. There's a new app. It is awesome. It is completely redesigned from scratch, from the ground up. And when that happens, folks, you might have some things that you want to complain about to us. Those things will get fixed. Here are the things that I do really, really like.
Me too.
I love that there is an Extra Time landing page for the first time, like a real one. You know what I mean? Like, if we can just send out a link, it's got all the subscribe spots. You can watch all the podcasts. You can see all the clips. You can follow the show. I've been asking for that for a long time. It is real. It is beautiful. Big thank you to all the people internally at MLS who made this new website happen. I know it was a labor of love, and it was tough.
We used MLSsoccer.com to get our own real estate. We nailed it. Mm-hmm.
That's true. We should have got the URL, just MLS.com. Really made a play for that one, but it wasn't going to happen.
I'll say this, though. The match centers are awesome, and I'm pretty excited about that as we get into the year. There are so many teams and so many games. So to be able to keep up a little bit better and have more of the sources of what you want at the match centers is pretty great. So I know a lot of people out there will be excited about that. I am one of them.
The news page. The homepage is cool, but I actually think the news page is where I'm going to be living most. It's really easy to get all the columnists that you want, to get to all the little, you know, informational pages, transactions, trades. It's all the information I want in one place. It's almost as good as... it's like Twitter and Reddit combined just on a website. So that's nice.
But if you want the never ending news, if you want the news in chronological order, you got to scroll down to the middle of the page. There's a tiny little more button. You got to click that one. So I'm sending a note to the dev team. That's got to be, you know, there's one of the things that I've noticed thus far as just nosing around it, but otherwise massive improvement.
And I'm really happy to hear Joe Lowry, Mike LaHood, Steve Zakuani, all back to write columns for the site. Of course, Doyle and I are still trying to do our thing as well as we possibly can after years of our brains being sucked dry by never-ending MLS news, games, and
I'm just looking forward to, because I think this season's when we finally reach the point where Rebe writes his article where he makes a list, but it's only to the number one. One person that you could be an MVP candidate. One golden boot.
Well, I could do that.
I actually like that because that's a prediction. A stand, man. That's good.
Yeah, I can't choose it all. I have to choose one. Okay, fine. Or I just rewrite the same article I wrote before and had no idea. And somebody pulls it back up. They're like, this is like close to what you wrote back in 2006. All right, producer Anders, reminder of the day, which is Club and Country Lives. We're back. Go Boom. Check it out. We released it on Wednesday. We had Sebastian Legette, and we also had Hercules Gomez talk through everything going on with the U.S. national team, Canada's World Cup chances, and their World Cup qualifiers. We went CONCACAF and with David Goss all around the region. That was fun. And looked ahead across the world, because 2021 is a huge year for international soccer. And thank you to Continental Tire for giving us basically another hour and a half, because that's how long we went to talk soccer. Producer Anders was annoyed, but I did, yeah. Sebastian Legette.
Okay. Sorry, yeah. I completely ignored you. So
we asked him about Euro snobs and also more interesting things. So check that out. Okay, look, we gotta before we jump into the news and everything else, we're gonna talk Open Cup qualification. Josie Altidore is tweeting. I think he's tweeting some real stuff and some important stuff. I'm not really interested in the side where it's the ego games. We don't matter really in this situation at all. I will say that what Josie's saying is what we've talked about a lot on this show, and what I've been thankful that so many of our players and journalists and others around Major League Soccer have come on to talk about, which is representation and the lack thereof. And it goes much deeper than this game. You know, you think about something that I've been reading about lately, and you know about, but it doesn't really hit you until, let's just say you're a parent, folks. You know, look, it's from birth. Look at infant mortality. Look at the mortality rate of mothers who give birth. Look at everything in our society and whose faces you see in positions of power and who gets the opportunity to commentate on things. And, you know, look, it's a real conversation that needs to be had. And I think Josie made some really good quotes. And I think that's what we should all focus on. So if you look at his mentions, you will see some of the vitriol and some of the perspectives and some of the lenses that what he's saying is getting filtered through. And it's the wrong lens. So don't get caught up in that side of it. Get caught up in the real world, the society we live in, and the real inequity that we have, and try to marinate on that a little bit. That's what I would say about it. And also that I really hope that Josie is back this year at his very best from a health perspective, because if he is as always dominant, and that is good for our league, and it's good for our league to hear him speak and speak strongly and say what he really feels. And so I hope he continues to do that. And I hope every player in our league feels the space, the freedom, and has the desire to put those things out as well, because it drives us all forward.
And we've, you know, you talked about what the players have done, what everyone has, a lot of people have worked towards over the last year and more for a lot of people's lives. Josie's a leader in the U.S. soccer community. He's a leader in the player pool. He's a leader in Major League Soccer in Canada. And so I personally, as a fan of his for many years and someone around the game, it's an honor to watch him lead. I stand Josie. I've done it for a while. And if you want to talk about that soccer side, he's one of the 25 greatest players in MLS history. He's a champion. He's a top three goal scorer in national team history. So if that's your quote unquote argument for anything, you're also wrong. So you're wrong on two fronts, which is your right, but you should probably avoid things like that.
And I'll just say that Josie and Crystal Dunn yesterday, the day before, talked about how it's difficult to be a black soccer player in America. And I believe them. I absolutely believe them. And I think we would all do well to open our ears and to pay attention when people speak about the type of inequities that are, you know, we see it on a macro scale in things much more important than soccer, but we see it in soccer too. So, you know, I like Weeby, like Gaspin said, I encourage everybody to keep speaking. It makes... To borrow a line from Bobby Warshaw, it makes sports and society better.
I would just say that I've been encouraged over the last couple of days to hear from so many about the personal message that I had on this last show about Asian hate. I would say that the lesson I've learned the most in that process is to shut up and listen. You don't have to have an opinion about everything. You don't. you can listen to the people that are living it, and that's what we should be doing right now. So I encourage you to go listen to what Josie is saying. All right, let's get into it. U.S. Open Cup qualification. We now know how these teams are going to qualify. Eight MLS teams, which is what we're going to focus on. This is, after all, an MLS podcast. It's on points per game. It's the first three games of the season, and then there's a tiebreaker buffet. I don't know if we'll dig into that one or how deep we'll get into it, but this is interesting. It's different. It's a sign of the times. It's what has to happen when everything gets thrown into disarray. I mean, we didn't even get this tournament last year, so I'm just happy that it's back in whatever form. I'm not really going to be a chooser on this one. What do you guys think about this qualification method? Doyle, is this the right way to do it? Is it a good way to do it? Are you indifferent?
I'm kind of indifferent. I'm just glad it's back. It's not really the U.S. Open Cup. I think Jim Curtin called it the U.S. Closed Cup. Jim's got dad jokes, clearly.
That one hit. I loved it. Yeah, I hadn't heard it, and I just truly loved it.
Look, it's reality. It's where we are in this country right now. I mean, cases are spiking back up, which is insanity. People, please protect yourselves and protect the ones around you. So like, this is the best we can do. There's just not an ability to have the full tournament in this country right now. I'm glad we're getting something.
So me and Doyle kind of ran through some schedules, because the other part about this is three games, you know, the schedules are already set, and that's going to decide a lot for the teams that can get in. And some of the teams we put together that it looks like it sets up pretty well for, you've got Nashville, who start with Cincinnati, Montreal, and Miami all at home, which is a pretty convenient first three games if that's what you're being judged on. LAFC start with two home games, and then they head to Houston for their third game. For the New England Revolution, a team I think a lot of us are picking to be a contender at the top of the league, they start at Chicago and then home to DC and Atlanta, two teams with new coaches who are kind of going to be figuring themselves out. You've got LAFC. I said that already. You've got Minnesota starting with RSL Austin, and then they start
with Seattle. Then they have home games against RSL and Austin. Yeah,
I wrote that backwards, so that was useless. And then Portland, you've got at Vancouver, which is also in Utah, versus Houston, and then at Dallas. Portland obviously missing Blanco early on, missing a striker option in Neoskota, but you still expect them to be competitive. Those are the teams, just quick look, that you think should be favorites to get into some of these spots over the course of those first three games.
Who should care the most about this tournament? Because I, you know, we go through that and we were talking about it, and it just feels like something that Nashville naturally should prioritize.
That's what's
for
my
a lot
argument.
Of different reasons.
So one is they've got the schedule set up, three home games. I mean, an MLS minimum home games you should be taking points from. And then there are three teams that you can say we think will struggle this year, especially a Cincinnati team with just a bunch of new players, game one. Then a Montreal team under a brand new coach that's not even able to travel back home. And then a Miami team, again, under a brand new coach with a few new pieces. So you'd expect that. But then you look at the way they performed in the playoffs. You look at Gary Smith's history. And it feels like this is a tournament team. This is a team that isn't going to make silly mistakes, isn't going to give up easy goals, and they're going to be in every game for a tournament setup. And with what year one was, now you've got less playoff teams. It's going to be a real fight in the East. If they won a cup in June, early June or May, they won a championship year two. I think that takes away whatever, you know, focus you want to say, oh, well, we don't want to waste players midweek. We want to focus on MLS and making the playoffs. I think winning a championship year one or year two would be massive for them. And this seems to set up for them really well.
Would you rather, if you were Nashville, and it's not this is kind of a false binary, right? Because it's not one or the other, but would you rather, we're going to pretend it's binary, would you rather win a U.S. Open Cup or make the playoffs? It's one or the other.
I think win an Open Cup. Yeah. And I think when you look at it, this year's still going to be a little bit weird and suck and whatever. You start next year with CCL. As a new club, you get to start in your market with CCL, and you can talk about how these are what the big teams do. It puts you on a different stage. I think it gives you the ability to acquire different types of players, and it puts a trophy in the trophy case when that doesn't happen for every MLS team. We could talk about good teams, right? The Oscar Pereja FC Dallas teams, they won one trophy, and it was that Open Cup.
Give them that shield.
Sorry.
Come on, man. They danced on the front yard.
That's true.
With Morrow, right, with that thing. Yeah, come on, you got to remember that.
But still, like, that is, it's a rare moment for teams, and for them to do it in year two would be massive. And so I think that to me is the direction you got to go in if you're that group.
Can I throw something out with that? then it's a binary. So we're like, it's very simplified here. But if they were to, I think it would be okay if they were close to making the playoffs, if they were almost there, if there was some like, hey, we were a good team, but it is only seven teams this time around. Everybody else took a step forward. We still made progress. But if you win that thing and then you don't make progress in the regular season, I still think that maybe that you would be happy and you would point to your trophy case and you would have CCL and be excited. You'd feel like there was a little bit missing, because part of what last year was for Nashville was that improvement. That's why the narrative was so strong for them. They were finding themselves. And then they found a different gear that said, maybe this team can be more than that. And they keep saying, we are more than that. We're going to be more than that. So if they don't show that they are more than that, what they were last year, I still think that would be a pretty big disappointment
the thing,
for them.
I agree with you. But we've been asking the whole time, how do they get better? And the answer would be, we won a championship. Right? Because we're talking about style. How do they be more expansive? How do they score more goals? How are they more dangerous? If they win a championship and they're the seventh or eighth place team in the East, they've gotten better. Right? Even if they're the same team, because they're not going to get blown out. We already saw that. They already have the base to keep them in make them competitive every game. This is the way they answer the question, which is, how does this club take that step? It's they win a trophy. And so, and it's a realistic one for them. And I think it's set up for them pretty well.
Give me Columbus with the quad. Mm-hmm. Give me CCL. Give me Open Cup. Give me Shield. Give me MLS
Cup. So you're telling me you want Columbus to, they have the hardest draw in CCL, right? They have they don't have Leon. First round, they have Pantara or something like that. Then they've got the hardest draw because they would have to go through two Liga MX teams just to get to the final.
Right.
And then you want them to beat Philly in week one to set themselves up to continue to play well in the opening 3 weeks. And then you want them to win Supporters Shield as well.
Be legends. Be legends.
It's Caleb. One of the best rosters I've ever seen going into a preseason. It's a tall task.
One of the best you've ever seen.
You don't think so?
I hadn't considered it in those terms. I don't think it's one of the best I've ever seen, but it's definitely one of the best in the league this year.
Here's it's an deal. MLS Cup winner who lost zero pieces and added multiple pieces that could be game changers or just depth.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about it. I'm telling you. I think next Monday, I'm looking at my schedule behind me. Yes, next Monday, as we do our full CCL preview, we'll talk about it. By the way, FS1 has those rights. He will not. I've checked the
schedule.
Isn't
the most pressure on LAFC for U.S. Open Cup? Bob Bradley has a great history with the U.S. Open Cup. LAFC have been an amazing team through 3 years. They haven't won a cup.
Is it pressure or is it opportunity? I think it's just a really good opportunity because of the depth of their roster and their quality. They can look at that tournament and say, I'm not sure we could probably win this without stretching us as far as other teams, which is not to say that it would be easy, but we might not have to stretch quite as far. We'll see, though. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. Those first 3 weeks to see who qualifies. Top eight teams, again, on points per game. Some other news out there. Sporting KC signed Danny Rojas. Nah, it's April Fools. They didn't sign him, but that was some good content.
Only person left who hasn't watched that show.
I pretended as if I did understand that reference, but I haven't watched the show either.
It was a funny show, and the thing Sporting KC was funny. It's not that big a deal, but it was
Ted
funny.
Lasso, in case you don't know. Eurosport says Everton are scouting Daryl DK and are very interested. Here are the key lines from that write-up. Quote, Everton are interested in Daryl DK, end quote. Quote, Everton scouts have been impressed with his displays, end quote. That's all we got here, but it is interesting. In a piece with Paul Tenorio, Barnsley's executive there, who Dane Murphy, said he did not know about any $10 million transfer offers. Maybe they didn't tell him. I don't know, but we'll see what happens with Daryl DK. Paul Areola, in other championship news, his loan has been canceled with Bwanzi. He's back. So
you're just gonna keep doing that B thing.
Yeah, I'm going to.
I couldn't even hear it on that one.
Yeah,
it sounded like you just
is a silent B.
Used a W. God.
Silent B on that one.
Classic
Bwanzi's
Welsh.
Been an MLS
loan.
That's not been a great place to go on loan here. What's it mean for DC? Paul Areola coming back.
So here's the thing that a little confused me is Paul Areola came back from the ACL tear. Well, I guess he went to January camp. What's weird to me was how late in the window he went when it felt like you kind of knew it was going to happen. It's a similar ownership group. That's one of the reasons it happened. If MLS players are going to go on loan, you'd think they'd want to be there January 1 and have the most opportunity to get up to speed and get healthy. And if this is something we're going to do going forward, which I'm fine with, there was that spell. And we've talked about it a couple of times when Chad Marshall and Omar Gonzalez and, there was like a bunch of players that kept going on loan or would go on loan. Or go train in the winter. I think it makes sense. But you just would think, why would you, you know, why would you show up the end of January? Wouldn't you want to show up earlier and get fit quicker and all that type of stuff?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, for DC, though, it is interesting because if he comes back, depending on when he gets healthy, I wrote the other day that Julian Gressel, it's a huge year for him because now he has a place to be at his very, very best, which is in that sort of wingback position, hitting the early ball and finding Ola Kamara and that second runner, if it's Flores or somebody else. And I don't know, maybe this is some competition there. DC might have to figure out how to get those minutes spread around and keep people happy. And maybe that means that somebody's available. TBD. FC Cincinnati got some players here, or one and another reported. Isaac Atanga from Nordsland is in. He is a right to dream guy, a Ghanaian winger, has some great stats in the Danish league so far. Sounds like this is going to be a quote-unquote young money signing, even though that's not yet official. That's sort of the reporting out there in Cincinnati. And then an Ecuadorian center back also in that mold coming in as well. They're both young players, international players. We'll see what happens.
Ecuadorian center back, part of that U20 Ecuador team that went, that beat us and went to the final of the U20 World Cup that every MLS team has pulled a guy off of at this point. Chicago's got half the team, but everyone else is looking for one.
Yeah, Gustavo Vallecilla. So go check him out if you'd like to. FC Dallas might have just sold Thiago Santos for a cool $1 million real quick.
1.5.
Oh, really? Nicely done. Yeah.
The latest reporting out of Brazil. We don't know if this is confirmed. We have not seen it confirmed stateside.
Yep, but that's something to throw out to you. And then Minnesota United news here. Adrian Heath had an interview that was pretty wide-ranging. I listened to the whole thing. They went through a lot of different things. They're trying to fill two or three more roster spots. They hope to get it done by the first game. They're in, quote, very strong negotiations. I think center forward we've already talked about there. He talked about a left wing, somebody who can provide more goals. And then another TBD. He also said that there's some clarity on Ike Opara. He said it's continued issues with concussions. Which, if you know Ike's injury history, you probably were assuming something like that anyway, and that there might be a solution coming. I don't know what that solution is. It sounds like probably that doesn't mean that Ike would play for Minnesota in 2021. Maybe there's some sort of buyout situation there. You just have to feel for Ike, his career, his life. There are more important things right now for him than soccer. So all our best wishes go out to Ike and making a tough decision, whatever that decision may be in the end. All right, let's get into it. Real soccer coming next Tuesday. 3 games starting at 5 p.m. Eastern, all of them on Fox Sports 1. It's the CONCACAF Champions League. It's back, baby. Maritón, Portland Timbers, Alajuelense, Atlanta United, Arcaí, and Cruz Azul. That's not Arashe. Arashe. Oh,
I think
thank
it's
you.
French because it's Haitian.
Yeah, it's Haitian, yeah. I just knew my French was going to fall far, far
and
short
I said it
of
wrong,
standards.
But I'm closer than you, and so.
Okay,
I think it's Arcaí. Right?
Doyle, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah,
don't make
we
got to
stop that. Yeah. 5 p.m. Eastern, Saprissa Union on Wednesday, and then León Toronto FC at 7, all on FS1 here in the U.S. Some 2-day end thrown in there as well. Let's do the Philadelphia Union preview. Here is your haiku. I'm back. Shield. History secured. Best 11 losses. Next up, can they stay elite? That's the big question. And is elite the goal? I mean, I think being a solid playoff team who can contend for trophies in the right moments is probably where this team is at this year. It's not, to me, like a Shield team, though, hey, I'd be willing to be proved wrong. It just seems hard to me when you lose the players that they lost. And we're talking about Brennan Aaronson and Mark McKenzie, both best 11. Ray Gattis, the legend. You know we love Ray on this show. So interested to see what he does, but he will not be playing 30 games at outside back for them and just being rock solid for the entire year. Warren Cravall played a lot of big minutes for him recently. Aurelien Collin, less so, and then Andrew Wooten, less so as well. But losing a lot of veterans, losing 3 starters, basically, from that team, and Aaronson, McKenzie, and Gattis. So
can I just ask this question? One, let's start with, we didn't get Charlie, but Anthony Fontana scored in preseason yesterday in his
twice,
honor.
Right?
Twice. There you go. So you're welcome, Charlie. We talk a lot about Brennan Aaronson. Doyle, losing Mark McKenzie, what does that change about this team? Because I think it's actually gone under the radar a bit. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, he was arguably the best center back in the league last year for large stretches and affects how well they can play in their style.
So first things first, that haiku was not a haiku. It was
come on.
It was 6-8-5 with the syllables. Like, you got to be able
shield.
To count.
Shield. History. Ding. Okay.
Also, this is how you do syllables?
Yeah.
So I do syllables stupid like this.
Yeah. It's very kindergarten.
Tell
me. It's
Let me
very
just
kindergarten.
Tell you got to get Cam a tutor. All right. I just want that to happen. McKenzie's ability to play out of the back was maybe the best in the league. He's a phenomenal passer. He got to the point where he was a pretty good defensive presence as well, though I don't think that was in any way his strong suit. I think you could argue that this Philly team, if the starting center back pairing is Glesnes and Jack Elliott, will be better defensively. They won't be as dynamic in terms of their distribution, but they'll be better defensively and they'll be more dangerous on set pieces. With Aronson, I didn't love Aronson as a 10. I wrote a million times last, I made videos about how he should be a winger. And we're seeing now in Austria and with the national team that he actually is a winger and he's awesome at it. Whereas Fontana is like, he's not a number 10 in the way we think about it, like South American string pulling number 10s. He's more of a number 10 in like the late arriving to the box, goal scoring number 10. That could kind of work. I'm not like, I know Philadelphia sold $15 million worth of best 11 players and lost their, you know, all-time appearance leader at right back. I'm not down on their ability to replace these guys.
So you think they can contend for supporter shield this year?
I don't know about that. I just don't think that the fall off is going to be gigantic. There will be some, especially at the start of the season. I don't think that they're going to cover themselves in glory in CCL. I think they might struggle for the first 2 months. But I also think that they're in better shape than most other teams would be in terms of replacing these guys from within.
So we had Dan hit us up, and he is one of our, you know, he's one of our most engaged listeners, I would say. And Dan, we appreciate you. He said, and he basically asked this question, which is, what is the scenario in which Philly performs well this year? So walk me back through that scenario, because the thing that I would get, and maybe we're jumping ahead to like the dog drinking coffee meme, that I would worry just a little bit about is that last year felt like career years across the board everywhere. Like everybody had their best year, certainly with the Union, but for a lot of guys, just career wise. And you'd think that's hard. That's hard to sustain.
I disagree with that. Yeah, Shabilko wasn't as good in 2020 as he was in 2019. I don't think Montero was either. Certainly not as influential. I think
Santos got better from year one to year two, but I think he can still get better as well. I think Doyle hit the names, which you could see improvement from those guys. And you talk about, okay, well, what do you lose with Aronson's production or whatever? If Shabilko plays like he did in 2019 and Santos takes another step, that's a ton of that production, and that gives that space for Fontana where no one's going to track him. No one's paying attention to him. If Shabilko's doing the things he did and Santos is making the runs that he was able to make last year and then is a somewhat efficient finisher at the end of it.
And the question is more stylistically, because Aronson was so good in transition moments that Philly became like almost exclusively a transition team. Like, they weren't a super high pressing team. They weren't great in possession, in my opinion. But anytime there were those transition opportunities, he was spearheading it. I think that is going to have to change somewhat. Fontana's not exactly that type of player. And without McKenzie's distribution, you lose the ability to get out real quick in those spots. The other thing is, like, Philly were extraordinarily healthy last year. Yeah. They lost almost no one of consequence for any prolonged stretches. Like, what happens if Jose Martinez takes a knock that sits him down for 2 months? That's tough. What happens? I mean, Ale Bedoya is 34. Like, what happens if he loses a step or a step and a half? Like, these are, to me, those are almost bigger questions than how do they replace McKenzie and Aronson, because like, their replacements are already there. They're already in the squad.
So all right, the one thing Doyle said, which I think is totally true, but I give them the benefit of the doubt on, is the style, because Jim Curtin has drastically changed styles multiple times since he's been there and has continued to win each time. And it's something he's good at. And so that's the one place where I agree with Doyle. It has to change and it's a worry, but the one person in this league I would trust to do that is Jim Curtin. And so I think that's where, going into this, I think all of us are kind of saying they're not going to win supporter shield most likely, but we don't think the floor is that low. This isn't a team that's going to drop at the playoffs because of what Jim Curtin's shown he can do and what the team still has.
Five homegrown signed in the offseason. It's a Union Way. Paxton Aronson, one of them, 17 years old. You'll recognize the last name, of course. He is the younger brother of Brendan Aronson. Stuart Finley, center back over from Kilmarnock. I think he might. Is he still stuck in Poland?
Kilmarnock.
Kilmarnock. I tried to say it fast.
I thought Weeby was doing it as a joke.
I was trying to, but I'm not very good at impressions. If we're all we know this, it's an established fact.
Okay.
He's been stuck. He hasn't even been able to get to the team because of visa issues. I'm not sure if he's even there yet.
Yeah, he arrived.
He got there. Good for him. Yeah. Good for him. And then they signed the young American kid who was with St. Pauli. Tom Boger has a nice piece on that at MLSsoccer.com. Any of those stand out to us, or is it really about the established folks and Baizo coming in at right back and getting a full run, et cetera?
I mean, Philly doesn't pay transfer fees lightly, so I assume they see something in both Leon Flock and Stuart Finley, who are the center back from Kilmarnock. And Flock is a...
Man, Darrell's got the hat on. Yeah, he's got a scotch waiting for him when this is over.
Got a little bit of a gray in the he likes Guinness in the morning. He's just like, I'm good to go here.
Guinness is Irish, not Scottish.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think they pretty obviously expect those guys to contribute, but no, I think that more of it is going to come from the guys who were already on the signing. Of the five homegrowns that they've signed, I haven't been able to watch a ton of their preseason. Paxton Aronson looks really good. He looks really good. And he is much more of a true number 10 than Brendan is. I don't think he's as dynamic an athlete, and that is going to be the bar he has to clear. I would be surprised if he cleared it in 2021. We might not see him hit it until 2023, but he can ball. You watch his kid play, he can ball.
He's grown like 5 inches. Like a surprise, but the story on Paxton Aronson was like other coaches would come to his team's Philly training to watch him play, but he was 4'11 and just couldn't really hang and do it for a full game. But I talked to multiple Philly Union Academy coaches who are like, yeah, we'll just pull up for 15 minutes when we have time because he does some amazing things. And to Doyle's point, it's a different style than what Brendan does. The thing that's interesting about Philly and something that, you know, we're probably going to see more and more going over is you mentioned the five homegrowns. I think right now it's the last generation of homegrowns, their opportunity. And so like Brendan Craig's not going to play in MLS. And this is what Philly does. They sign them, they get them under control, and they're able to work with their careers. But it's Jack DeVries. It's Anthony Fontana. Cole Turner. It's guys like that who I think are going to break through this year because they've had the time to train with the first team. They've seen the responsibility. They're a little bit more ready to take on those roles. And that's, I think, how it's going to work for Philly. You know, you're going to sign a class and then still work them through the Philly 2 system for a year or two or three until they're ready to play in the first team.
One real quick note on DeVries. He's been starting up top in preseason because both Santos and Kasper Schipilko have knocked, and Corey Burke as well. So he's a really well-regarded young player. We'll see.
Oh, well, real. It's going to get real. They got some Parisa and CCL. We'll talk about that in just a second. We're going to have to extend
this
thing.
Imagine, can just half a second that it's Cole Turner and Jack DeVries and Anthony Fontana that win CCL, that it's an MLS homegrown as a teenager that scores the game winner in a Liga MX stadium.
Open your heart. Yes, open your heart. Expose yourself, Dave.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm fine with it because when it happens.
Show us your internal organs so that we may rip them out. All right. Look, that was the 2022 player spotlight there.
Unless you've loved Weeby.
Yeah, that was Paxton Aronson. We did that. Who's the star? Is there a star? Can we pick out a star? Or is this the same as
Jamiro Montero? Yeah, I think of all the players on this team who can be like a dominant player, I think we saw more of that from Montero in 2019 than we did in 2020.
But they're not sliding him back up.
No, they're not. He's still playing as a he's still playing as a shuttler, which I he's good at it. I thought he was excellent as a number 10 in 2019. But I love him. He's a fantastic player.
We also have to say we're talking field players because Andre Blake was goalkeeper of the year last year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If he does that again, which they need him to, and there's no reason he can't, he's one of the elite players in the region.
I think we did the "this is fine" meme because I think that is probably the injury side of things. We all agree on the prediction side. I don't think we have to dig too deep into that because we do have CCL to talk about. That this is a playoff team and solidly so, and perhaps much better than that, depending on how things go and if the level stays and they get the tactics right, they could be a top 2-3 team in the East, or maybe even go back to that Shield status. Maybe. We shall see. It would be a big step for them as a club to replace two best 11 players and still be there, but that's what the Union want to be. Do they want to be CCL champions? I mean, it depends on how much you want this thing. Everybody wants it to different degrees, and everybody experiences the same fate in CONCACAF Champions League. So at Saprissa next Wednesday, 5 p.m. Eastern on FS1. I believe that is the second night of action, so we'll have already eased our way into it. I've taken a few punches by that time, so we'll be really prepared for this one. What do we think about their chances in CCL? I've kind of got the vibe that we wouldn't be betting on them, let's say.
I don't expect this team to look anything close to what they were last year until like mid-May at the earliest.
Yeah,
sorry, cold water. There it is.
No, I agree with Doyle. You're also looking at Saprissa and Alajuelense probably for them, which are established veteran groups, which makes it really hard for Philly.
In mid-season?
Right.
Playoffs was a disappointment. Too. I mean, the Shield was a great accomplishment, but when it came time for that.
The only thing I'll say is there's nothing to lose for them, right? One, it's their first time, and two, they're so young as a group that there's no like, we don't want to push these guys too hard too early in the year before we get their legs on them. Like, you're just going to play these kids and go, Jose Martinez can run, it seems like, for 4 years in a row. So you're just going to go for it. It's not like they're going to slow play the roster into it. But to Doyle's point, they're not going to be ready to compete at that level.
I just think of CCL and this year in particular, the way that preseason is gone and the scheduling is gone. And it is always this way, which is survive, survive, survive the first round. Like, find a way. Doesn't matter how you do it. And probably the second round too. And then you just hope to have a chance to get to the final, which has rarely happened in MLS history as it is, that you find that groove, that you find a group that understand each other and can perform and can beat the best in the region. And it's the odds are low.
Weebs, what did we do to start the last show for 30 minutes?
Oh, I don't remember.
We talked about Olympic qualifying. So just remember that when you talk about these teams trying to survive against clubs in form.
There's been multiple shows this week, so I don't remember what the beginning of any of them are.
All right, that's
the we'll dig deeper into this, I think, and really talk about Saprissa more on Monday's show. So if you have thoughts on CCL, hit us up. Let's go to NYCFC now. Here is my, and by the way, I changed the haiku for publishing on Twitter. I said Shield history made for the Union. So not history secured. It's been made now. And I'll have to re-clap the other lines too, just to make sure I got those right. So never have learned how to do it in a more efficient way. Not going to lie. All right. NYCFC need more, says Dyla. Good hasn't been good enough. What do they stand for?
Floored by that.
I was counting syllables. I was just double checking that one.
How about the messaging on that one? Forget the syllables. Do we think that holds true for them this year?
Yeah. I think like they've been really consistently good over the past 5 years. But Ronnie Dyle is 1000% correct. This team needs an infusion of talent. Their best and most important player is 34 years old, and he missed at least half of last season. With the types of injuries that older players pick up. They lost their starting left back. Their best center forward is still hurt. He tore his ACL. They're not better than they were. No, they're just getting worse and worse since that really great team in 2019. They've just sort of steadily ebbed downwards, and there's no indication that there's an appetite to stop that.
There have been rumors throughout the offseason of this guy, players down in Uruguay, the Romanian winger that Columbus signed, that are a player in at Benfica, that are talking to CFG, quote unquote, and then that would be assumed an NYCFC move. But there's no position you can say they're better at than they've been. And we've talked about their depth and consistency the last few years. They don't have that anymore in most spots. Their starters are probably equal because it's the same guys in a lot of places, but one of their talents as a team was the depth and the ability to move pieces around, and they don't have that. They lost Matriza as well. They haven't replaced that. And so it used to be you had five or six attacking options. Whoever was hot, you could roll with. That's not the case anymore. Really, Tati Castellanos is the only flexible piece along that front line. So it's hard to say that they're better than they've been, and they've been good. So it's hard to say that this team is going to do something this year that they haven't done over the last few years.
I would say the strength of that 2019 team, as you said, it was their depth, but it was also like, if you looked across that entire roster, they had a top five player in the league at every spot, every single spot. They had a top five player in the league. Now it's tough to say that they have more than two or three. And that's like, that's a significant, significant drop off.
All right, let's count them through.
I was going to say Sean Johnson is probably top five.
Tinnerholm, Sean Johnson, and I think
how about Collins. This? Collins and Chanel as a combo. I think Collins is there probably, at least in the conversation. But as a combo,
that's a top five center back.
Right. Would you put Sands in it?
I mean, he's got to stay healthy for a full year, right?
Yeah.
And would you put you'd say Maxie's close if he's healthy.
We did put Keaton Parks, didn't we?
I did put Keaton Parks. Yeah.
There you go. And Maxie, you know Maxie's close if he's healthy. And Eber, if healthy, is there as well.
I don't know if Maxie's close if he's healthy in these days.
I don't think his performance dropped over the last year and a half. It's just his ability to play minutes. He was a monster to both play and what he did on the field. And over the last 18 months, the first part has gone away, and you can't put him in the lineup every week.
So they still have more than most teams, right? Yep. But they're not, they have significantly less than what they had in 2019. And that's compounded by the lack of depth that we see, especially in the attack. The other wild card here is that, like, Ronnie Dialek came in last year and he basically tried to keep Domé Torrent's style and formation. But Ronnie Dialek has traditionally, through his career, I believe he's more often played with two forwards than one. So we could, or front three. So we could end up seeing something, like, if they struggle, it would not shock me at all if five games into the season, erase the entire whiteboard, start all over, we're playing a 4-4-2. How do you even rate what this team would look like, because we've almost never seen them play like that.
But listen, I think Eber and Castellanos could be a decent
partnership,
but you have to get Eber back. But maybe that's what Dial is saying when he's like, I need more. Maybe he's saying this roster isn't constructed to my preferences, and the more is, yes, they do need more talent, but it's more in those targeted spots to let me play the way that I want to play, because what I inherited said you need to play this way.
What he inherited too was, as we've mentioned a few times, one of the best teams in the league, that Domé Torrent kept saying he needed more at the time, and it's only gotten worse. So it kind of seems to be a running theme of sorts.
I'll give them this though, they'll be the other team
at Red Bull Arena a lot. Historically, that team wins championships. Baby Bulls, 2016.
I think 10 games at Red Bull Arena. We sort of brushed over that one on the schedule, but that is an interesting wrinkle to their season as well. A couple left backs. Chris Gloucester's one. Edmondson is the other. Alfredo Morales, rumored to NYCFC per Sam and Paul.
Rumored by Sam, reported by Paul.
Yeah, correct. Rumored by Sam.
I just don't want to...
Where does he fit? Is this just like he's a domestic... experienced central midfielder and he's available, let's add him? Or is this like, well, we have overseas interest in James Sands and we're probably gonna sell him when the window opens?
I think it's part of that. I wonder if there's a world in which they actually are playing Parks, Morales, and Sands and just trying to like dominate midfield and control that space and let the attackers just have freedom. I don't know if it makes sense, but I'm wondering if that's part of it, of like, let's be really young and active in central midfield and clean, and then just let the attackers take care of the final third.
I mean, if you were going to, I don't know what he's going to do. Who knows what Dial would do. But if you're going to try to fit him, maybe you're looking something more like what the Union have in their midfield.
Going to a diamond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, if they think he's a starter, maybe he's not a starter. I don't know. We did
you
the
could
starter.
Play, you could play Sands at the back point, and you could have Morales and Parks as the shuttlers, and then Maxie as a number 10. That actually might clear some stuff up.
Now, and don't forget they have... Tajiri Shradi and Castellanos could... I mean, that could be decent. There's a lot of mobility there.
I think Tajiri Shradi can maybe play as a second forward.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Now we're talking ourselves into some. Don't forget they have Nicolas Acevedo, who I think won Young Player of the Year in Europe before he came. So there's they've always had a ton of depth in central midfield, and they continue to add there. And that's why the Alfredo Morales is like, this is just what NYCFC does, and it's smart, right? Just keep getting talent, and then you can move it in the league if you need to as well, if that's how your roster ends up looking like they did with Alex Ring.
Maxi Morales is the star. I don't think we need to belabor that one. He is a long-term MLS shining light. We've talked about him a ton, and we talked about the difference with and without him and his age and the role that will play here. The other thing I was going to say when you guys were talking about 2019 versus 2021, it's just 2 years, too. 2 years is a long time, and everything happened in those 2 years.
Doyle's like, tell me about it. Yeah. Where's my Scott?
How about this? Let's focus just a little bit more on James Sands. He's our 2022 player to watch. He's got a ton of talent when he's on the field. He's not the guy that maybe you're looking at like the highlight reel afterward, the all touch, but maybe we should be because he stops a lot of bad things from happening. And he's the first, in a lot of senses, the first sort of like tick on the box to good things happening. It's just not always the one that you remember.
Yep. I mean, he's a boring player to talk about because he just hits all his rotations, wins the ball, and then hits simple passes. And the key for James Sands to elevate his game and his profile and maybe even elevate NYCFC is to be braver with the passes he hits immediately after winning the ball. He plays square way too often, and he plays backwards way too often, but he has the talent to do more than that. And this is a big year for him to, first of all, stay healthy, and second of all, show that he has that in his game. Because if he does show he has that in his game, first of all, there will be a multi-million dollar move to Europe. He's that level of player. Second of all, I think if he shows that passing range and that ability to set a tempo, he vaults to number two on the U.S. national team defensive midfielder depth chart. He's just much better defensively than Jackson Yule or Kellen Acosta, who we've seen both of them play there recently. And I think like it doesn't even Andres Pereira doesn't even compare to him defensively or in terms of ball winning. So I think that like this is a huge opportunity for James Sands this year.
All right, let's hit the this is fine meme and the predictions at the same time. I'm not saying that they're going to happen the same thing. I'm just saying that let's combine them because for ease and time here. What do we think about this team? I mean, it feels to me like still a playoff team because, one, I do think this is the sort of club that will make moves in the summer if they need to. And Ronnie Dial has already been telegraphing that. Like, you don't come out and say those things publicly if there's not either, one, something to it, or, two, you're wanting to put pressure on folks to go do it.
Have you done your preseason standings?
I've been trying to, and it's really, really hard.
I'm just asking because I think it's fine to say that, but I'm wondering what teams you don't have in the playoffs that I do, if you have NYCFC in. That's my only question.
I don't think NYCFC is anyway a top three team. I think I look at this team and I look at the quality, especially from like eight back, even if Maxi's out, just to sort of grind things out and be good enough. And I think, five, six, seven, they can be there. But yeah, look, I'm still doing my exact rankings, which makes all this just the most inexact science of all time. And I still don't have anybody on the sheet because I can't hold myself to any standard, and it's really hard.
Okay. Well, I just look at this year, and if you take last year's playoffs and you say there's a few teams that I have, Columbus, New England, and Orlando at the top of the East. I still think Toronto will be good this year. I think DC makes a jump. I've already said I think Philly's in. Now you're talking about one playoff spot for Atlanta, Nashville, Miami, NYCFC, and Red Bull, Chicago as well. So they're in that pool of teams, but there's, to me, five above them, three at the top that are clear, and NYCFC's not in any of those. So they could, they might not, but they have not differentiated themselves from those other clubs around them.
I'm exactly with you. I think like I think they're a little bit more likely to make the playoffs than miss them. But I wouldn't be surprised either way, unless suddenly the skies open and DPs start falling out and, you know, young money signings start coming in and Dial is able to weave it all together. But if it hasn't happened yet, it's been 2 years of this.
Yeah, I think your math is good. Dave, and I guess that's where, even without doing the math personally, I was like, 5, 6, 7, but you're right. It's like 5 to 10. It's not 5, 6, 7. It's 5, 10, 11. There is a group of teams in there that you could really just shuffle and throw in, and I don't think would surprise anyone. So big year for NYCFC as they keep trying to hold on to that playoff card. All right, Austin FC, good vibes in Verde. Like the roster, respect Wolf. Be legendary. I say legendary because Matthew McConaughey went and did an interview. I don't know who he did it with. I think it was a local in Austin. And he's just talking about in 5, 10, 20 years, man, we're going to be legendary. This is going to be legendary. That's what they want to be. That's what they're going for. And that's honestly what we should hope for from all expansion teams. They haven't hit reality yet. It's not a real thing. Everything is good. Everything is coming up Verde.
They're going to change the game. They're going to change this league forever.
Exactly, man. Like, this stadium, nobody's seen anything like it. Our fans, you can't touch them. Our supporters are going to set a new standard. You know, everything is new. Everything has the possibility to be legendary, and that's what they should be going for, because that's what we should want from every single one of our teams. I will remind you that they start with a legendary matchup to start the year. April 17th at LAFC on Fox, one of the biggest matches of opening weekend. There is Austin FC on the stage, and they got to perform. How will they do? I guess we'll find out. We've talked a lot on this show about how much we like the roster. Well, they'll be on the road for a while, so that's going to be an interesting wrinkle for that expansion team. Most of the teams that have built stadiums have been established, had a roster, done it, and then transitioned. They're going straight to June 19th on the road. Then the Q2 will open against San Jose Earthquakes.
Remember, LAFC started this way. It was 5 games on the road, I think. They won in Seattle. They annihilated RSL in that 5-0 game, and then they went home, and they were one of the better expansion teams we've ever seen.
They had Carlos Vela. Now, look, Cecilio Dominguez might not have the profile of Vela, but he could be very, very good. Ronnie Redis looks like he's got something, and he had a really nice final season in Paraguay as well. 7 goals, 3 in Libertadores. Right now, by the way, if you want to watch this team, La Copita is kicking off. That's all those Texas teams. They're doing their thing in preseason, so go check that one out. The key signings is the entire 11, so I figured we could just walk people through that. I mean, it's the whole team. There's no like key signings for an expansion team. It's their whole entire roster. So here is what we kind of have as a group. We have this internal doc that we all work on, and Tom Bogert has been sort of the driver behind. We have Danny Hoosen up top. That's probably the biggest question mark. So we'll round back around to that one. Dominguez on the left. Red is on the right. This is a 4-3-3. Danny Pereira as one of the quote-unquote free eights, but it seems like Tomas Pochettino, they keep more talking about him as a 10, so he'll probably be more advanced. He's there as well. And then it's Alexander Ring at that 6 spot. Lima, Romana, Beasler, Sweat across the back, right to left, and then Tarbell in goal. What do you think about that 11 as it stands right now? And is that the right 11, or did I get somebody wrong in there?
No, I think that's the right 11 right now. There are questions, obviously, how much does Matt Beasler have left? Will Kalmanic, the left back they signed, will he jump ahead of Ben Sweat? Is Diego Fagundes going to play a role? Diego Fagundes is only 26 years old, and he's got, you know, 50 goals, 50 assists in this league. And you could see, like, I could very easily imagine him thriving in a new situation with a new head coach, because he still has the talent for that. A lot of it, though, is going to come down to, like, how dangerous are their DPs? Are Dominguez and Pochettino and Redes, who's, I think, a young DP? Does he have that?
No, I think he's going to be a young money player when it's okay, all so, done.
But either way, the guys that they spent a lot of money on in the attack, like, how quickly can they coalesce into a high-level attacking unit that creates repeatable high-level chances for their very questionable striker core to finish off?
Is this the sort of situation, you know, we often joke about Greg Berhalter striker whisperer, where this is just that in Austin, and they were like, Danny Hoosen has a lot of these attributes that we think really work with the way that we want to provide service and the way we want our patterns to work, and we've seen them work.
I think that's totally true. I don't mean to keep referencing this, but remember when Marco Ureña didn't score a goal but was the starting center forward for LAFC and they were one of the best attacks in the league? Like, it's possible in this league to have that if it all fits together correctly.
And by the way, for LAFC, that was a temporary solution.
Mm-hmm. It was the right
temporary solution for them, but it was a temporary solution. So maybe this is that, where they say, we think we can get 6 months to a year of pretty good soccer out of Denny Hoosen. He fits this role pretty well. And if it doesn't work, John Gallagher looked decent with Atlanta United. Aaron Schoenfeld could go in here and play a role. If you understand the movement and you make the right runs, we think we'll get you to the ball in the right spot. Then can you finish? I mean, yeah, there's something to it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you said we weren't going to do, you know, big acquisitions. The big one's Alex Ring. If you've got a guy elite at that position the way he is, you'll compete in MLS. There's a few tenants that every team needs, and then you can kind of change it off that. But you have to have one elite center back. You have to have one of the best sixes in the league, and you have to have someone who's a pure chance creator. And Alex Ring's on that list. And so that gives you an opportunity to contend, and it allows a Pochettino time to settle in, or a Pereira time to grow, whatever it is. Alex Ring was probably the biggest move they made this offseason.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
How good can Cecilio Dominguez be?
That's literally a multi-million dollar question. I mean, based upon his profile and, you know, what I've seen of him, and of course played in Liga MX for a while, so we all watched a decent amount of him. He couldn't be very, very good. Like, very good. I don't think he's an MVP caliber player. I don't even think he's best likely to be like a best 11 caliber player. But he could get there, I guess. But like they need him to be a star. They absolutely need him to be a star in this setup and with the way this team seems to be constructed.
2222, got a couple players for you here. Ronny Redes just jumps right in under there. He's 21, but he'll stay 21. He's got more than 100 pro games, 14 goals. I said seven last year. Seven last year was a nice step forward from him, knowing that this move was coming. So that'll be a good one. And then Danny Pereira was the first overall super draft pick. He is still just 20, and right now we have him in the starting lineup. Now, they have a lot of sort of depth and options in that particular position, so that may not be the way it lasts.
They don't have a ton. They have
enough to say, okay, well, Fagundes could take that spot. Okay, right. Well, you know, if maybe Hector Jimenez could jump into that spot if you needed to, maybe, you know, what I'm saying is he doesn't
have to play Hector
Jimenez
in central midfield.
I mean, he's played there in the past, but I think Jimenez is most likely like
a backup,
very, very deep depth at central midfield and both fullback spots. Whereas like it's basically three guys for two spots. It's Pochettino, Pereira, and Fagundes for those two free eight roles. Assuming that's how this team plays, we're just assuming that Josh Wolf is going to use the system that Greg Berhalter has been using for the U.S. national team. We're not sure of that yet.
What do you think the odds are he would switch it, though?
No, I don't. It's not just that. And I understand Doyle saying that, but also we're looking at the signings they're making, and this is the way it all seems to fit together. Yeah. That's the other piece of it. And I think I've heard that there's some promise with the Kolamich, the left back, and you said it. Can he take Ben Sweat's minutes? I think you go into an MLS season, you only want Ben Sweat playing half your minutes, and that's not like a knock on him. That's just the reality of what the last
piece. Player, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that's a perfect role for this is a young 20-year-old left back. Let's get him some experience before we make the signing permanent to see where he stands. So I think there's some excitement around him and what he could be for this team.
What is the bad? We've talked a lot about the good because that's, I think you know.
There's a few things you could say. To me, the bad is Romana is new to this league and it's a tough league to catch up to. And Matt Beisler is as done as some people thought he was, especially if you don't have the foil to his style in a Romana being successful. And so this team starts to leak goals. And once that happens, you've got a brand new midfield trying to learn to play together. There's no confidence. There's no trust. That to me is the biggest worry for this team. And I think they've done a decent job bringing in depth with Cascante and Kleeman, but it still falls on those two players' shoulders to be at least league average, if not better, throughout the season.
I actually think the this is fine is the South Americans who came to Austin integrating about as well as the ones who came to Miami last year, which is to say not well at all, and just struggling to be anything cohesive and live up to their reputations and their price tags. You know, we've seen We've seen some teams really knock it out of the park with some of these signings, and we've seen some of these signings really, really, really struggle.
Yeah, I think like those are two big flags. And as enthusiastic as I am about this team and have been about this team, I mean, that is the reality side of this, is that it's easy to be excited when it's theoretical. It's easy to be excited when everything's just bare there. There might be some Rojo coming here. We don't know. How about predictions on them? Are they a playoff team? What do you think?
I've got them fighting on the line most of the year around that 7-8 spot. And I think that's a good season, just to be relevant the whole time, week in and week out, to be competitive, maybe beat some of your Texas rivals. I think that's a good year, and that's my expectation.
Yeah, I think they'll be competitive, but I'll be surprised if they make the playoffs.
It sounded to me, I think the way you guys did the math on NYCFC applies just about the same here. Like, could they be 5, 6, 7? Sure. Could they be 11th? Yeah, for sure. That could be possible, too. There's a big spread for them. We'll see what happens for Austin FC in their first season in Major League Soccer. Let us know what you think, Austin fans. I don't know if have we heard a ton from Austin fans? 401-206-MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com. Anders says yes. I trust Anders. Okay. San Jose Earthquakes, Judson Hive. Just to get out. By the way, we also got through that entire preview without Dave hitting us with a Jared Stroud reference. So
Jared Stroud's going to have a huge year, guys. And right when they took him in the expansion draft, you guys know Charlie Fiction. I get the text immediately. Damn it. That's the level of nerd it is, but it's a good move. And Sebastian Berhalter as well. It's a homegrown player on loan. It's something kind of new in MLS. I think it's going to be something more common going forward. Give it to me, Sebastian. Show me some good stuff.
All right. San Jose Earthquakes. Let's go. Mateus's guys. Man marking. Love it. Hate it. We can't look away. I mean, sometimes it's ugly, sometimes it's pretty, and it's hard to predict, but it seems like it goes in waves for the Earthquakes. Certainly this team is composed of Mateus Almeida's guys. We saw that this offseason, going out and getting El Chofis, Javier Eduardo Lopez going. I mean, Eric Remedy, I don't know if it's quote-unquote his guy, but it fits into sort of profile that he seems to want.
No, Eric Remedy got his pro debut under
Mateus
Almeida. Yeah.
Well, I should have known that. Luciano Abacasis is a 30-year-old right back that they got from, I think, Club Libertad. But yeah, he comes in as depth. I mean, these are not, other than Chofis, who should be that 10, these are not necessarily sexy signings.
By the way, don't mean to hammer this home. It's La Chofis because it's named after a female.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Everything I read last night in preparation for this was either wrong or I just automatically switched it back because of the way my brain works. With
the story is he looked like one of his teammates' girlfriends.
Yeah, so I heard that, but then I don't know. That's
sorry,
one for me.
I didn't mean to duolingo you right now, but you know.
Yeah, no, Anders.
You made duo sad.
Anders has got the private chat, which we really need to be public here, which is, quote, Weeby tried to cram for the test. That's true. That's very true. Okay, here's a big question for you. And Dan, who we've already put legend status on in this show, hit us up with it. How many goals for Wando this year? Over under is 9.5, which is just savage and cruel.
Oh, boy.
And I will always pound that over forever and ever. Wando could be retired. I'd be like, he's got 10 in him, man. Minimum 10.
Better question, is Wando the starting center for it at the end of the year?
He is at the beginning, I think.
Yep.
No.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Who?
You don't think Andy Rios is starting to start this year?
No, I think Wando is.
Wow. Wando.
Yeah.
I don't know that I agree with that, but okay. That's fair. I got no idea.
David just froze.
That's what happens. That's what's called justice right there.
So the way... Oh, you're back, David. So the way... Almeida, and all the focus on Mateus Almeida through 2 years has been on his defensive scheme, which is man marking, which is, it's completely understandable that that's where most of the focus has been, given that it's unique in this league. The attacking setup is distinct because wingers with chalk on their boots, fullbacks pushed up to the point where they're basically standing on the winger's shoulder. Just make the field as wide as possible. Force the opposition to come out and defend as wide as possible. Judson wins the ball. Ewell sprays it around. The number 10 finds those pockets. And that gives Wando, almost always Wando, the chance to find little pockets of space in the box against the back line that, because of how big the field is, like, they're always scrambling. It's a lot of fun to watch, and it's rewarded anyone who does watch it with some of the most entertaining soccer in the league. I just wonder how high the ceiling is with this, because I mean, the risk reward is like maxed out on one side and then maxed out on the other as well. Like their ceil- the difference between this team's ceiling and their floor is higher. It's bigger than any other team in the league.
And you talk about ceiling with this team. It's probably the best group Matias has had here to fit what he wants to do. Again, Lachofi is not an elite. We don't think he's going to be a top five number 10. You don't think that Alanis is a top five center back. You know, like that doesn't mean that this is an on paper stud squad, but it's the best Matias has had, and he's flirted with the playoffs before. And so you'd like to think if he sticks to his guns and the team continues to individually progress, felt like Fierro got better as the year went along last year. Marcos Lopez as well as one of the big individual improvements that they have, JT Marcinkowski as well, that they should continue to get better. I don't know. That doesn't mean other teams aren't getting a lot better. And that doesn't mean the league's not figuring out what he wants to do, Matias, and you know, feeling more comfortable against it. But if you're a San Jose fan, I think you have to be hopeful that this is the best group you've had in a little while.
Here's your 22-22. I think it's got to be Cade Cowell. Eli Sandoval hit us up. He says, what would you guys consider a successful year for Cade Cowell in 2021? Regular minutes, winning a starting role, more goals. What would it be? And for those that don't know Cade Cowell, the player, give us a little bit of a...
Jordan Morris. He's a young Jordan Morris. The first thing that stands out about him is his athleticism. But then you watch him play a little bit, and he, you know, his runs are very, they're direct, but they're clever. He understands how to make the defense suffer a little bit off the ball. And he's got a little bit more on the ball than I think people realized at first. He'll almost always play as an inverted left winger. Though we've seen him on the right a little bit, and he really is more of a goal scorer than a playmaker. And like Jordan Morris, at this point, he's probably still more of a wide forward than he is an actual winger. What progress would look like for Cowell, who I think just turns 18 at the end of the year. So he's just 17 now.
I think it's consistent minutes, whether it starts or off the bench. If he's a major part of this rotation, that's a good year for him. And that puts him into, he's already in the conversation, but youth national teams and things like that. So I think that's the step for him. Last year, I just looked up four starts, 18 appearances. So you just want to keep adding to that. And most of it was down the stretch. And in a year, and we've talked about this with three games in 1 week and all this different stuff, he should get them.
He's going to play. Yeah.
Yeah. He's probably the third winger on this roster.
Yeah, actually, because it's Espinoza, Fierro, and between him and
Shea Salinas
for that third winger spot,
the legend.
But Shea Salinas will play anything.
Sid Haji, they have their draft pick there behind him. See where that goes. They have Fuentes behind that too. I think a homegrown there. But Wando just said, "I'm literally in awe each day at the specimen he is, and pure jealousy of the attributes that he has." That's an old man who sees his body going away, wishing that he could run like that for another couple years. I did not read
Maybe
that.
You're
first.
Projecting. You're projecting.
Yeah, I'm not. I didn't say that quote. Chris Wondolowski did. It'll be great to see Cade Cowell get some minutes here and take another step forward. Adjacent, though, 22-22 is Marcinkowski and Marcos Lopez. And those guys might be more important, probably are more important.
I mean, the difference last year, it was night and day once Marcinkowski got the starting keeper job. He made a huge difference, and I don't think his ceiling is extraordinarily high, but he was mostly mistake-free. And then the one game where he did make just colossal mistakes against Portland, he bounced back the next game and was excellent. So like, that's a good mentality for a young keeper. Lopez is the one, because they brought him in. He's already a full Peruvian national teamer. He really struggled in 2019, to the point where he was not even close to the starting lineup, I don't think, at the start of 2020, but then he played his way into it. And I think he was much better by the end of last year. If he keeps that going, he's an attacking threat from left back, like they kind of haven't had the last couple of years.
This is fine meme. What? It's the 5-0s and not the 3-2s, right? I mean, the one thing I will say about this team is that they do get smacked a decent amount just because of the style of play. but they find a way to bounce back. It's not like a team that gets whooped and then you're just like, oh, they're down and out. They got no chance. Like, it's just it's as likely amazing that they'll come back and win the next game than it is that it'll happen again.
I mean, that first month after the MLS's back tournament was like the worst month of soccer we've ever seen an MLS team play. They were losing by 5 goals half their games. And then they just, you know, Almeida made some lineup adjustments and like that was just like changing the personnel. So that tells you that there's not a ton of quality depth here. And the other thing is they're just so bad defending set pieces. They are so bad defending set pieces that like it costs them every other game. It'll cost them points.
Any chance this is a playoff team?
Yeah. A good chance, because I still think that most of the time they are going to be the game's protagonists. They're going to dictate the tempo of the game and how it's played. And when they're doing that, they're a really tough team to beat. And they're a really tough team to keep off the scoreboard. And if you have to open yourself up and start scrambling for a result against them, then they're very likely to get that second or third goal. So, I think this has a very good chance of being a playoff team. I just don't think the ceiling is that high, partly because of talent, but partly because I still think man marking is kind of a gimmick and good teams can exploit it. And we've seen that from the likes of LAFC and the Sounders over the past couple of years.
I
would add, just when Doyle says that, I think I agree with him where he has them. This is a season where I've talked a lot about internationals and who's going to be gone and who's going to be here. And this is a group that should stick together. I mean, Jackson Yule's really the only big one, maybe Marcos Lopez. So
I think Lopez will go to Copa right. America, right?
But those are, when you look at the quality of players, teams are going to lose. And for the stretches they will, this should be a team that can cover that. So maybe that's an opportunity for them to pick up points in the summer to kind of lead from the front going into the playoff race.
Not a playoff team for me. And the reason being the back half of the year is going to be so packed up that I just wonder the exertion factor that'll be here.
We have seen this team fade down the stretch.
And it doesn't seem like that. Weeby
feels
well.
His old man body watching San
yeah,
Jose.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, me and Wando are just like rubbing our knees and like getting up really slowly after we do any sort of physical activity. It'll be a fun team to watch. We didn't really mention Christian Espinoza, and I think that is probably a mistake on our part. So I will just say to any of you that are sort of finishing this preview up being like, oh man, I do want to watch San Jose. Yeah, those games are variable, let's say, and often have a lot of goals. Christian Espinoza is really fun to watch. One of the best 1v1 players in this league. His chance creation is really, really, really elite. So if you need a player, yeah, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I was selling
it. I'm just saying, like, yeah. It's a really big question with San Jose. Like, their upside is in large part determined by, can Christian Espinoza put the ball in the back of the net more than 3 times this year?
He does it spectacularly. All the other stuff, though. It's really fun. Go watch him. Mateus, I'm in his team. All right. Into the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Paul from Houston, can't believe I'm siding with Weeby over Goss on this one, but the Olympics are a huge marketing opportunity for the U.S. men's soccer that's been lost. Americans are into the Olympics, and if the U.S. was able to get into the knockout rounds, there would be a lot of Americans exposed to the men's game that don't watch MLS. And if we're worried about the quality of the game on the field, then we have the capability to raise the bar significantly. How amazing would it be if Weston McKennie was the captain of the team? P.S. Jesus Ferreira to Houston. We've already done the Olympics thing, but let's just have fun with the Jesus Ferreira to Houston. Could that be something that in a world where FC Dallas would trade their homegrown and son of arguably their best ever player to a rival, would that ever be a thing? And would it make sense for Houston?
I'm not sure it would make sense for Houston unless Tab decided he wanted to play with two forwards. I think I fully convinced myself that Jesus Ferreira needs to go to a place where he could be a second forward. So Philadelphia, Red Bulls, NYCFC, if Dyla changes the formation, all of those would make more sense to me than to Houston.
Okay. All right. Chris Hull, who has emerged as a legend here on this show. Hey, what's up, ET? Just a quick note to say I really enjoyed the Nashville preview this year. We appreciate you reading the email I sent and putting a few things from it. Oh, another email from him. I've always been proud that our foreign players are off internationals for their countries, but never thought about how that could be a much bigger liability in 2021 than a typical year. But at least it does give our younger players a chance to rotate in. Thought that bit was clever from us. I think that is going to be another thing this year that I'm really looking forward to. And we talked about the back half of the year. One of the real bright spots, at least for this show and nerds like us and the Play Your Kids folks, is that A, with more subs, but B, with more games and less amount of time and less recovery time, we got to see more of players who would normally be quote-unquote fringe players who we would probably only see in, like, Open Cup games last year. So I'm looking forward to that. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Dave, I'm just reading for Dave here, so I don't know how this thing is made up. What's a good one? Should I go with?
I'm laughing at the PS on this next one from what is this? What would you do? PS Weeby, go with your first question in interviews. It's usually the best. Quit asking it, then talk some more, and then ask another one or two more questions.
You know, the nice thing is
that's got to be from Anders.
I've never heard that feedback. This is literally the first time. Certainly before interviews, Dave never says that exact thing to me. So I'll print that one out, put it on the wall, and right before we do interviews, I'll go take a look at it. So what are we doing next? And then I was going to try to fill for a little while and then come back and ask a couple other different questions. But
I'll ask this one because it's a quick one, and maybe my service will hang on. Bill Wiener, Austin, Texas, new listener here. Shout out to Bill. Welcome to all the Austin fans who are new. You missed an obvious promo kit when we were talking about the Jimi Hendrix kit in Seattle, Austin FC with Willie Nelson rolling in Verde.
That's good. And by the way, for the respect of Bill and his name, it's Bill Wieners. So I just wanted to.
I took off the S.
You
just
took
gave
the
him
S
one.
Off, and I just wanted to establish that Bill, we're giving you your proper due here. How about this one? We've got one on Gio Reyna. This is from Bill in DC. Sincere question: why do people think Gio Reyna has so much potential? Bill, have you watched Gio play in the Bundesliga for Dortmund and also for the U.S. For Bill, he doesn't seem to stand out at anything, not particularly skilled on the ball. Gonna have to disagree with that one pretty strongly. He doesn't seem that physically gifted. Also gonna be a big disagree for me on that one. He doesn't work particularly hard. I think that's a judgment call that I'm not gonna make here because I don't agree with it. Once again, doesn't pass, create opportunities that much. Okay, I mean, you might be able to argue that. And isn't a super impressive finisher. I don't know about that either. It's the consistency side, maybe. Major issues. Could grow into a great player, says Bill. But he seems to be very much on the doubtful side. Doyle, you've been more on the doubtful side, at least for immediate impact for the national team. But I don't think any of us debate Gio Reyna's overall ability. I mean, the kid is an absolute baller.
Yeah, I've said a million times, I think he has, along with Pulisic, or maybe even ahead of Pulisic, the most upside in the entire U.S. player pool. He's so gifted technically. Like, his ability to receive the ball under traffic and in traffic and then make the first guy miss or even take the ball into traffic and beat guys off. Like, we have never had a player at this level, even his old man, and I loved Claudio, was not at this level. And that's in part because Claudio is not the athlete that Gio is. Gio's incredible, like, first step. He's strong. His body control as well. Like, there's a clip going around, I think one of the scuffed guys tweeted it, of him just controlling a pass up the sideline and in one motion controlling, turning, and outletting, like, directly into Yunus Musa's run. And it's just so pretty. There is a world in which Gio Reyna turns into Kevin De Bruyne, but he has to work out some young player issues, and some of the criticisms that Bill from DC put in here ring true to me. Like, his movement off the ball is not great. I think it has improved. We're starting to see some green shoots in terms of finding space, especially in the final third and being dangerous off the ball, but it's not at a high level yet. He does hold onto the ball way too long. Like, he is a ball stopper. And this was something that we've seen from him for years since he was, you know, playing in the DA. Like, he's a good old fashioned ball hog at times. And he's got to work through that. But a lot of the best players in soccer history, like, Messi was a ball hog when he was 17 and 18 years old. You eventually grow out of that, hopefully. And I think that Reyna will. The body language thing that Bill brought up. Yeah. I mean, it bothers me. I don't like it. But I don't know if it bothers his teammates that much. That's like, I don't, like, you would have to ask them and you would have to see. But I think that the smart money is on Gio Reyna becoming a really, really, really good soccer player, even though he does still have pretty obvious flaws.
This used to be a big body language podcast.
Yes.
But we're not really, we've lost the expert in the field. He's been out of the game for more than a year at this point. Look, it's a fun show here. Again, I'll remind everybody, we had Club and Country come out midweek, so you have an extra hour and a half of content if you need to or you want to. Go check that out. Sebastian Legette, DuBois, talking about Greg Berhalter's vision for him, for this program, the young players that he sees in camp, and what his career might have been if West Ham had worked out and why some of the perceptions of him are wrong. Check that out. Hercules Gomez was awesome. Talked to us about Josie at that nine position for the U.S., why we should not count that out. I think we've all been on that boat saying, look, if he's healthy, he's probably the top option still at this point. And also Chicharito in the big year that it is for him. So had fun with that one, with the Nations League best 11 that we think Greg Berhalter could look for. We also talked through World Cup qualifying in depth. I mean, like, in depth. Dave took you there and hit Canada as well. So go check that out. We'll do it every single month, and we'll elicit more feedback from you on what you want out of that show, because there is so much to cover. On Monday, CCL preview. Go check out the new MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app if you don't have it, and subscribe and rate the call-up and us if you feel like it. We'll see you on Monday, everybody.